Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha. My name is Chana Meira, and today we'll be learning Parshat Noach. This week's Parsha is 153 psukim long, and it's made up of 6 prakim. Let's first go through each aliyah just to understand the overview of the Parsha, and then I'd like to explore one idea in a bit more depth. In our first aliyah, we introduced to Noach as an Ish Tzadik Tamim, a perfectly righteous person, and his 3 sons, Shem, Cham, and Yafes. In contrast, the rest of the world has become corrupt, and the most specific crime that nails their fate is that of chamas, robbery. Hashem informs Noach of his plan to destroy the world, and he gives a detailed instruction to build a teva. Noach is instructed to bring himself, his sons, his wife and his sons' wives, and 1 male and female of every living creature into the teva, as well as enough food. It's interesting to note that Hashem informs Noach of his plan as if he wants Noach to do something about it. Later on, we'll see when Hashem informs Avram of his plan to destroy Sodom, Avram protests. In Sefer Shemot, when Hashem informs Moshe of his plan to destroy the Jewish people, Moshe does something. Here, Noach doesn't protest. So Hashem gives him the mission of building a teva, which took 120 years, hoping that people would notice what Noach was doing and engage in conversation and be inspired to do teshuvah, but that didn't happen. Noach built his teva, people mocked him, but nobody changed their actions. In the second aliyah, Hashem tells Noach to enter the teva because in 7 days the flood would begin. He's also instructed to bring 7 pairs of pure animals. The flood begins on the 17th of Cheshvan, and everyone enters the teva be'etzem hayom hazeh, which signifies that no one could stop them. In the third aliyah, we have a detailed description of the duration of the flood. 40 days and nights it rains, then there are 150 days where the waters swell and wipe out all life forms except the fish. And it says, Ach Noach, except Noach. Whenever it uses this word Ach, it means a lashon miot, coming to minimize, because Noach almost never made it. Rashi says he worked so hard looking after the animals, he was coughing up blood. And according to the Midrash, lion bit Noach when Noach was late one day in bringing him his food. Noach worked tremendously hard to ensure the survival of the animals at great personal cost. The water slowly recedes and the teva comes to rest on Mount Ararat. The water continues going down and eventually Noach sends out the raven and then the dove to check if the earth is dry. Finally, on the 27th of Iyar, a complete solar year after the beginning of the flood, the mabul is over. In the fourth aliyah, Hashem commands Noach and his family and all the animals to leave. Noach builds a mizbeach and sacrifices the pure animals that Hashem had asked him to bring, 7 pairs of each. And Hashem commits to never again curse the ground because of man. And now, 6 new seasons are introduced. Zera, Katzir, sowing and reaping. Kor v'cham, extreme cold and heat. Kaitz v'charif, summer and winter. Hashem blesses Noach and his family, very similar to in Bereshis, Pru Uruvu Umilu Et Haaretz. But now we have a slight twist. Man is granted the power to eat meat. But in order not to allow this new allowance to corrupt him, this license is tempered with some commandments. First of all, there is the commandment of Ever Min Achai. Man is not allowed to eat the limb of a living animal, and he is also not allowed to kill a human. Shvoch dam ha'adam ba'adam damoy shofech. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man his blood shall be shed. And then it carries on, ki b'tzelem Elokim asat adam, because man was created in the image of God. This message contains a warning. Last week's parsha, we discussed that people appropriated the role of godliness from becoming b'tzelem Elokim to thinking they could be God, and this led to murder. So now they're being warned, don't think of yourself as Tzelem Elokim, think of the other as Tzelem Elokim. To quote Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, we should think not of ourselves, but of human other as the image of God. This is the only way to save ourselves from violence and self-destruction. In the fifth aliyah, Hashem promises to never again destroy the world with a flood, and he designates the rainbow as a symbol of this covenant. The significance of the rainbow is when we see it in the sky, it means that mankind's actions are such that Hashem should destroy the world, but Hashem is remembering his covenant and holding himself back. Now, Noach is being set up to continue Adam's original charge to rule over the world and to guard it and work it. He has Hashem's bracha, he's been given a covenant, and now it's up to him to step up. However, in the next aliyah, we see Noach loses the opportunity once again over a tree and a fruit. So in the sixth aliyah, it says, Vayachal Noach liyot ish adama. Noach, Rashi translates this as he debases himself by planting a vineyard. When a person begins a new initiative, the way he starts sets the tone for the continuation and either success or fail of that project. So Noach was beginning the new planting of the world. He should have planted something like wheat, something nutritious. Wine is considered more frivolous. It's more of an expression of wanting pleasure and enjoyment than necessity and well-being. Noach harvests his vineyard, makes wine, drinks from it, and becomes drunk. In his drunken state, he goes into his own tent and he undresses. He is naked. Notice the echo of Adam's sin. Adam also, when he ate from the fruit, he realized he was naked. Here too, Noach makes himself drunk and he is naked. Ham notices his father in his drunken state and he disgraces him. It's not clear what he did, but he definitely caused him harm. And then he goes and he tells his brothers, who instead of responding the way Ham thought they would, they take great care to cover their father respectfully. Noach wakes up and he realizes what Ham had done to him, and he curses Ham through his son Canaan, and he blesses Shem and Yefet for their kibbur av. The aliyah ends by listing the 70 nations that come from Noach's sons. In the last aliyah, we have the story of the Dor HaFlaga, the generation of the dispersion, who built the Tower of Babel. Hashem had commanded Noach and his sons, Pru Uruvu Umilu et Ha'aris, disperse throughout the land. But instead of dispersing, they all congregated together in one area. And the Mefarshim have different explanations as to what the purpose of both gathering together and the building of the tower. Some say they made a calculation that every 1,000 or so years there's going to be a flood, so they wanted to build a tall tower to escape the next flood. Some say they wanted to use it for idol worship. In fact, there are archaeological discoveries in Mesopotamia, the ancient civilization of Sumer. They found these buildings, which they call ziggurats, which are these towers which they would place their idols on the top. And some said that they wanted to declare war against Hashem. The Netziv has a novel interpretation about what the Tower of Babel was. He says the reason why people were united was not by choice. Rather, this was the first totalitarian state. People were very nervous of anybody who thought different to the new world order, and they used it to spy on each other to make sure that everybody was conforming. And he says that they appointed supervisors so no man could leave their settlement. And anyone who departed from their, the Pasuk says, Dvarim Achadim, which he uses as one set of words, meaning one life view, they would be sentenced to burning. This is what happened to Avram when he challenged the society at the time and refused to bow down to idols. He was thrown in the Kivshan HaEsh, which seems to have been the common punishment for all dissidents at that time. Hashem doesn't want us to live in a totalitarian state, so he intervened by causing people to speak different languages and be unable to understand each other. If we can't communicate, we can't cooperate, and this led to the end of the project and people dispersing all over the world. In the very end of the parasha, we see the lineage from Shem ending in Avram. This completes our summary of the parasha. Now I would like to examine the parasha in more detail, to see if we can find our overarching theme that we began last week. Last week we discussed the midrash that the Torah begins with a bet in Bereishis because Hashem originally infused the world with bracha, but it's mankind's actions that bring curse into the world. And this week we see the theme continuing. First, the world is destroyed by flood because of the actions of man. Man became corrupt. Then Hashem blesses Noah after the flood. And then Noach curses Ham because of his actions. He curses Ham through his son Canaan. And then the parasha concludes by introducing us to Avram, who in the next parasha is going to be blessed by Hashem. In order to understand why Avram specifically was chosen, it's worth noting that the Torah begins with all mankind. Originally, Hashem had a mission for everybody. That's why Hashem created the world. And when he created Adam, it was supposed to be a universal task for all his future descendants, There wasn't meant to be Jews and non-Jews, separate people. Hashem wanted everyone to do his will. Adam failed. So afterwards, we go through the generations until we get to Noach. Once Noach becomes drunk and he negates himself from being the one to carry out Hashem's mandate, the Torah then examines each of Noach's three sons to see which of their descendants might be the one to carry on and fulfill Hashem's mission in the world. So the first son who's discussed is Yefet. And the Torah goes through the lineage of Yefet and finishes off, Me'ele nefredu yei hagoyim ba'artzatam. From these, the nations of the islands were divided into their lands. The Ramban interprets this to mean, each son lived in his own isolated region. There was a lack of cooperation, and this failure to work together negated the line of Yefet from being the chosen people, if you will. So next, we look at the line of Cham. Cham, it tells us his sons, and then it singles out one of his grandsons. Cham has Cush, v'Cush yeladet Nimrod, hu hechel liyot gibor ba'aretz. Cush has Nimrod, and he is the first mighty man on the earth. What makes him mighty? Well, we see that Nimrod is the first person to build an empire. V'tehi reshet mamlachto Bavel, v'erech, v'akad, v'kalnei, be'eretz Shinar. Some historians like to place Nimrod as King Sargon of Akkadia. Now, military conquests distinguish people in the annals of history, but this is not what the Torah views as greatness. The Torah does not look for power and ambition and subjugation of others. Such a person cannot be the conduit of the bracha that Hashem wants to bring into the world. So then we look at the third son, Shem. In the initial description of the three sons, Shem is not really distinguished, but at the end of the parsha, when we once again go through the line of Shem, we have a small anecdote that's brought down. It starts off like all the other lineages. Ele told a Terach. Terach holidet Avram, ve'et Nachor, ve'et Haran, v'Haran holidet Lot. So we have Terach, who has three sons, Avram, Nachor, and Haran has Lot. So we have three generations here. Ve'yamas Haran al p'nei Terach Aviv. Haran dies in front of his father Terach, be'eretz moladetan, the land of his earth, in Ur Kasdan. Now, we have something that we have never seen before. The whole family steps in collectively to help. And you wouldn't know this unless you read the text very carefully. The pasuk tells us, Vayikach Avram v'Nachar lahem nashim. Avram and Nachar took for themselves wives. Shem eshet Avram Sarai. Avram's wife's name was Sarai. V'shem eshet Nachar Milcah. Nachar's wife was Milcah. Who is Milcah? But Haran, the daughter of Haran, Avi Milcah va'Avi Yiska. So this very convoluted pasuk is telling us that in addition to Lot, Haran had two daughters, Milcah and Yiska, who's also called Sarah. And each of Haran's brothers married their niece. What happened was Haran left three young adult children and the family bands together to look after them. We have never seen a family come in and take care of each other in this way before. Objectively, this is an act of kindness. But it could be that Terach is going to look after Lot because it's his grandson and he wants to carry on the male line. It could be that Nachor is marrying Milcah to look after her. It could be for another reason. But Avraham, the Torah gives us one extra detail. It says that Sarah was an akara. She couldn't have children. And in a society where children were valued, because every lineage it stresses, and they had sons and daughters, to marry someone who couldn't have children and stay married to them is an act of great selflessness. So while both brothers and the father come to look after Haran's children, Avram is distinguished for being the one who's doing it for complete selfless reasons. This action of overriding self-interest is in stark contrast to the very beginning of the parasha where people were selfish and this eventually led to the flood. Now, if you look carefully at the words when the flood began, there's a very strange phrase used. V'arubot ha'shamayim niftachu. The storehouses of heavens were opened. There's only one other time in Tanakh where we have this exact phraseology. It says in the end of Nevi'im, in Sefer Malachi, Eftach lachem arubot ha'shamayim. I will open for you the floodgates of heaven. So two times it says in the Torah that Hashem will open the floodgates. One is in a negative connotation and one is in a positive connotation. In our parasha, it's meant as a curse. It's the result of chamas. What is Hamas? The Midrash Rabbah tells us that the type of Hamas that the generation of the flood practiced was each person would steal from their neighbor something tiny, like the size of a small bean. You can't persecute somebody for stealing a bean. But if you put out your beans to dry and everyone takes just one, you're left with nothing. So it was this consistent low-level crime that was too small to punish that eventually eroded the fabric of society. And then on the other hand, you have in Malachi, this bracha where Hashem opens the Arubat HaShemayim and it even adds onto it, Hashem will give you bracha ad bli day, unlimited bracha. What is this action that opens the storehouses of heaven? It's forgiving Maisa. Maisa is a percentage of your profit that we have to give. In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, it was obligatory. Now it's voluntary. So you would give some of your crops to the Levi, some to the poor. This is sort of like an income tax. It's something that you have to do. And it's not necessarily heroic. It's not like donating a new wing to a hospital. It's a low-level, consistent act of charity that we need to do. There's a very clear parallel between the two of these. One is a consistent low-level action of selfishness, and one is a consistent low-level action of kindness. And the Torah is telling us an unbelievable thing. Our life is made up of small, repetitious actions, and the compound effect of our actions will dictate whether we live a life of bracha or whether we bring destruction onto ourselves. And this is why the world was destroyed, because of low-level selfishness. And this is why Avram is going to be the person who is going to continue Hashem's mandate in the world. From now on, the narrative of Bereishis is going to focus specifically on Avram and his family. Why? Because of his consistent small actions to look after his family and those around him. These are going to have a compound effect until he becomes Av Hamon Goyim, the father of many nations. He's going to be the source of bracha. So the lesson for our lives is very clear. Consistent actions, the small things we do every single day, not the big headliners, not even the big mess-ups, because we do have tshuva. It's the small continuous things that shape our lives, either unfortunately for destruction, but hopefully for bracha ad bli day, unlimited bracha. Have a wonderful week.